Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations. This is a summary of episode 11 brought to you by our resident expert in high reliability organizing, Dr. Ralph Sol. Ralph is an experienced practitioner as well as a fantastic scholar, and he has a number of years of experience of being a nuclear operator for the US Navy, so he has a great degree of personal familiarity with the subject of the paper by Beerley and Spender that we looked at in the full episode. Now, before we get to the summary, I just want to make a quick announcement that if you like the podcast, as we hope you do, but would like to get involved, we do have a number of opportunities that we are seeking help with. For instance, we are looking for someone to take over management of our blog and as well as some of the marketing aspects of the podcast. If you'd like to learn more, either get in touch with us directly or go to the podcast website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com, click on the podcast link in the navigation menu, and then select one of the submenus, each of which gives more details on how it is that you can help us grow this podcast and develop it further. Alright, I hope you enjoy the summary, and if you haven't listened to the episode yet, please go and do so. Now, over to Ralph.
This is Dr. Ralph Sol. In this episode, we discussed Culture and High Reliability Organizations, The Case of the Nuclear Submarine. This was an article written by Paul Beerley and J.C. Spender in 1995, based on their personal experience in the Navy nuclear power program. The term High Reliability Organization, or HRO, was coined by Rockland, Laporte, and Roberts to describe organizations that achieve superb safety performance under difficult circumstances and perform highly complex technical tasks in unforgiving environments. HRO scholarship has sought to resolve the organizational structure paradox between the need for centralization of knowledge to manage highly complex technical systems, that is, systems that are too complex for any small group to understand, and the need for decentralized decision-making to prevent failure of tightly coupled parts of the system. It is thought that decentralized decision-making puts the decision power in the hands of those closest to the problem and therefore best suited to find ways to address problems that have come up. Prior to the theory of high reliability organizing, there was no way to describe how to reconcile the paradox between technological and organizational complexity in high-risk systems. Paul Beerley and J.C. Spender's 1995 article, Culture and High Reliability Organizations, The Case of the Nuclear Submarine, is about the culture that underpins the reliability of nuclear submarines. The authors argued that culture and organizational structure are mutually reinforcing in producing high reliability. Drawing from their personal experience, the authors argue for a multi-level model in which culture interacts with and supports formal structure and thereby produces high reliability. The article begins with listing the defining characteristics of high-risk systems. First, the potential to create a catastrophe, which could be large-scale loss of life or widespread environmental damage. Second, complexity, having large numbers of highly interdependent subsystems with many possible combinations that are nonlinear and thus cannot always be predicted or understood. Third, tightly coupled subsystems, so perturbations are transmitted rapidly between them with minimal attenuation. In Managing the Unexpected, Carl Weick and Kathleen Sutcliffe provide a description of interactive complexity that characterizes many high-risk systems. I'm going to quote it here. On an assembly line, components only interact with the other components that precede or follow in some direct sequence. Moreover, the assembly process is relatively well understood. If a belt breaks and the line stops, The problem is, relatively speaking, visible and comprehensible. Interactively complex systems possess a more elaborate set of interconnections and nonlinear feedback loops, some of which are hidden or impossible to anticipate. For example, nuclear power generation is not a set of independent serial steps. Instead, it requires the coordination of numerous mechanical components by many operators. And despite years of operation, not all aspects of nuclear physics or nuclear heat transfer are completely understood. Now I'm back to the Beerley and Spender article. According to Charles Perrow's normal accident theory, organizational centralization is the only effective way of preventing failure in tightly coupled systems. Perrow went on to argue that decentralization to reduce failures in complex systems was not viable because of the decision-making load resulting from centralization. The people at the center of decision-making would not be able to process all the information that would be coming to them. Based on his analysis, Perrow concluded that failure was inevitable, even normal, in complex systems, so certain technologies should be abandoned because the impact of the failures was too great for society to bear. And yet, many high-risk systems seldom fail and have remarkable records of safe operations. Aircraft carrier flight operations, commercial aviation, air traffic control, nuclear power plants are a few examples. The fact that high-risk systems seldom fail suggests the presence of some powerful stabilizing structures overlooked in Perrow's analysis. Carl Weick argued that the cultural mode of control may be the crucial source of administrative control in high-risk organizations. The fundamental divergence between Perrow and Weick goes beyond the conventional notion of culture. It revolves around the presence or absence of higher-level collective knowledge and its impact on the individuals operating the system. For Perrow, all knowledge was scientific, embodied in roles, rules, and structural relationships, and Perrow tended to ignore the people in the system. By definition, in high-risk situations, the organization's scientific understanding is faulty, so centralization, which depends on total knowledge, conflicts with delegation, which is a way of dealing with faulty knowledge. For Weick and others mentioned in the article, scientific knowledge coexists with higher-level collective or social knowledge. Centralization based at the collective level can coexist with decentralization at the individual level. This, Weick argued, is why high-risk organizations can be transformed into high-reliability organizations. Beerley and Spender provide a description of submariner culture and how it comes about through formal and informal practices. By the way, nuclear submariners do not refer to themselves as submariners. Submariners is the correct term. They also don't refer to the nuclear submarine as a ship. They refer to it as a boat, which is contrary to naval tradition, which says that a boat is anything you can put on a ship. The authors note that submariners' culture is risk-averse, shared between different ships, and the result of constant training in theory, operations, and responding to emergencies. The training emphasizes specific terminology, communication behaviors, formal hierarchy, and detailed knowledge of system design and performance. This is for the entire submarine, not just the propulsion plant. Nuclear operator culture has many components not mentioned by Beerley and Spender, such as balancing strict compliance with orders and procedures with a questioning attitude, balancing respect for authority and knowledge with watch team backup, which is correcting people if you think they're making an error, transparency, internal and external assessments and audits and letters to the admiral about the performance of the ship and its systems and crew, critiques, where much tacit knowledge and assumptions are revealed, high standards for technical skill through certifications and training, articulation of operator principles repeatedly and systematically so that they become part of the way people think about the propulsion plant and their duties. And finally, standard operation procedures. The authors maintain that the culture of the U.S. nuclear Navy cannot be understood without reference to the changes in organizational and operational procedures initiated by Admiral Hyman G. Rickover. Admiral Rickover is commonly thought of as the father of the nuclear Navy. Rickover exercised greater control over details of design, operation, personnel selections, training, and oversight than had ever been attempted in the Navy before or since. The authors devote considerable attention in the article to describing the specific practices initiated by Admiral Rickover and that have been sustained by his successors. In the inquiry into the causes and problems associated with the meltdown of the Three Mile Island reactor in the 1970s, Rickover insisted that the extraordinary reliability of Navy nuclear-powered ships was not due to military context and personnel. Rather, it was due to careful selection of highly intelligent and motivated people who were thoroughly trained and then held personally accountable performance to a standard. The authors assert that the nuclear operator and engineering culture of the U.S. Navy maximizes group performance and gives it the resilient capabilities fundamental to high reliability operation. The nuclear submarine illustrates how culture is a higher level system of knowledge and experience can interact with and support a bureaucracy to transform a high-risk system into a high-reliability system. High-reliability operations principles and scholarship provide a coherent theory to support organizational safety, leadership, and education.
All right, and this concludes all of episode 11, the full episode and this summary now. We really hope you enjoyed it, and next week we are going to bring you something special, an episode we recorded together with Ralph at the end of last month at the OLKC conference in St. Andrews in Scotland. That special episode features Professors Paul Duguid and Emma Bell, and we're talking about the value and role of conferences in the academic community and in spreading knowledge, as well as sharing some excellent stories and personal experiences. It's really interesting, and do tune in, and we hope to see you next week as we talk about conferences here on Talking About Organizations.